God's 7,000-Year Kingdom Seminar, you will see the Bible come alive as you see the centuries unfold before your eyes. Dr. Dorothy C. Youngblood, co-founder of Conservative Theological University, will present a 7,000-year world history and Bible timeline, revealing God's world history, past, present, and future. Recommended for pastors, Christian school teachers, Bible students, and homeschoolers. It all happens Saturday, August 27th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. A light lunch will be provided. Registration is $99 and includes syllabus, lecture, and the light lunch. You will never view the Bible in the same way after you attend this powerful, informative seminar presentation. It's God's 7,000-Year Kingdom Seminar with Dr. Dorothy C. Youngblood. Saturday, August 27th. Register now. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. That's 1-800-GO-BIBLE.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today. We're in conference and conversation with Al Ferrero. Al is the, may I say this, ladies and gentlemen, I believe the only conservative candidate running for mayor for the city of Jacksonville. I'm thankful for his life, for his stand on the issues. We're talking with Al today about some of the things that he's wanting to accomplish, why he's running for office, and what he's wanting to do. Al, one of the things came to mind while we're on the break with what we see taking place with the raiding of President Trump's home and what they're doing. It reminds me of Proverbs 26:27 and Ecclesiastes 10:8. And basically summarized, both of those verses say that if you dig a pit for someone else, you're going to fall in it. If you try to roll a stone on someone else, it's going to roll back on you. It is very, very clear. And I don't think these folks with the Democratic Party and Joe Biden and his constituents and the DOJ and Merrick Garland and Chris Wray and the FBI, I don't believe they understand what they're doing and the power of God in vindicating, President Donald J. Trump. So I am encouraged to know that God is still in control, that the Word of God is still relevant and alive today. Ladies and gentlemen, that telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. We're talking with Al Ferrero. Al, before the break, we were talking about some of the things that you were wanting to accomplish and do. Let me just simply ask a question. If you would take a moment to tell us about what we're seeing in our city. Let's just use this term. What are the 3 major things? And that may be half a dozen, but what are the 3 top things that you plan to get accomplished when elected mayor of the city of Jacksonville?
So crime is at the top of the list. We have crime that is just running rapid through our city. And the lawlessness that's happening, from petty things to major things, where they're not actually getting prosecuted too, and that's a problem in itself. Where a lot of people look at just the sheriff's office, but we got to make sure that these petty crimes are getting prosecuted, and that we're following through, so that we don't have them turn into bigger things. And the way I would fix on the crime part is we have a code of silence where we have drug dealing, we have prostitution, we have a lot of things And a lot of it is more densely populated in certain areas. And we've got to break the code of silence. To do that as the elected official, the highest elected official, is to go into those areas, get people to trust you. And that's one of the things I've been working on. I've done it in my district, and I'm doing it in other areas right now, where when people will trust you and they will believe in you, they are going to be more prone to start breaking this code of silence so that we can get these bad people out of town. So we just get rid of them and lock them up. The other thing, too, is our streets and everything are so filthy, dirty, that we should be using our prison systems with a work release to where we have these folks out here working so that we see when kids go by and say, hey, what's the guy wearing the black and white uniform? Well, they're in jail, so that they understand that it's not someplace you want to go. But to give the folks that are in jail the opportunity to work this off, because we got plenty of things around the city that need help on. Our core functions, you know, making sure that we're doing what we're supposed to. I'm very upset when I hear that we have elected officials or people in departments that are reading how well something's doing, for example, how well the roads are doing, how well the crime's doing. If you as a citizen or a taxpayer and you see your roads are getting fixed and you don't have bumpy roads, you don't need somebody to read a sheet off saying this road's better or this bridge is better or the crime's going down. You don't need to have somebody read that. You can see that. So it'd be crime, it'd be core functions, veteran centers, and overdevelopment. The development is something where I'm really concerned with as well. I am not opposed to development. You'll hear a lot of people say, well, he's against development. Good development. I don't like to see new development going in and it's affecting existing areas. I can't tell you how many times I've sat on land use and zoning and I've seen development go in and all of a sudden the neighbors that have lived out there for 20 years or generations, now they have flooding issues where they didn't have that before. These are things that fall on the back of the mayor's office under the development departments, to where we really need to look at what we're doing when we bring things into the city and how it affects people who've been here for a long time paying taxes. We want to have new businesses, new people, new jobs coming in here, but we don't want to do it at the detriment of people who've been here for a long period of time and not think about them. The veterans, they're starting to take a polling of what we can do for veterans. I think that's a good thing. We're known as the most veteran-friendly city in Jacksonville. I would take one of our buildings downtown, and I would have it where we had veterans who were in there helping veterans off the street, the ones that are having a problem, either mental issues or they're having job issues or adapting. There's no better solution to have veterans who are treating other veterans. And we have a lot of veterans who want to do this to help out at no charge other than having a place to go and do this. The list goes on and on of things that I've seen over the past 7 years of putting these thoughts into action that will actually help our citizens and also watch over what our taxes, the taxes that we have. We've got so much money coming into the city now that we're sitting on the city council thinking of all these different ways of spending it. And if we have enough time, I'd like to also talk about there's things like the internet cafes that are going to be they're looking at coming back into our city. Money that's being spent for nonprofits. So, I mean, I could go on and on, Dr. Youngblood, and I appreciate you having me out here because my mind is just racing around right now with all the different things that I want to fix.
Al, you touched on the nonprofits. Our church, we're nonprofit. The university is nonprofit. I've never thought that it would be right for a nonprofit to go with a handout to the city for taxpayer dollars to assist that nonprofit. And yet we seem to have a proliferation of that in the city of Jacksonville, and I believe across the nation. I believe there needs to be some major, 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 and if I can add that word again, major restrictions on how taxpayer money is doled out to nonprofits. And you touched on it earlier when I find so many of our elected leaders having nonprofits, that those nonprofits are having their hands out at the public feeding trough for their nonprofits, and yet they're voting on those issues that help those fundings for their nonprofits. Almost like Nancy Pelosi and her husband and her son now, where we find that when Nancy Pelosi is about to vote on a bill or introducing a bill for some technological advancement of some tech company or some green energy company, all of a sudden you find that her husband and her son have major, major, major stock they bought in it before the vote so that it goes up. I am appalled by the amount of that, the volume of that sort of thing that's taking place in our city. Is that something that is a hot potato that you'd like to touch on for a moment?
It is, because this is taxpayer dollars that is supposed to be used to help out things that taxpayers need and can't do themselves. The roads, the infrastructure, bridges, drainage, things that people can't build on their own. The Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce is looking at getting $750,000 on one issue out of the general fund, not to mention all the other different entities that get money out of the JIA, Jacksonville Port Authority, all these other different things. Just out of the general fund, it's gone from the time that I've been in there at $200,000 to $250,000 to $750,000. These things are going up so high. And these are the folks that are supposed to be bringing jobs into the city, and the jobs are coming in like crazy. We have an economic department in the mayor's office that feed this to them, and yet they're getting general fund dollars to where it is tough for me to go and try to break the code of silence and the crime and go into parts of the city where it looks like a third world nation. And we're wondering why people are doing the things that they're doing when they're coming down to city council and they're begging for our help. And we're taking these dollars and we're spending it and not doing it to where it's throughout the city. And we're expecting something different to happen with each administration, but each administration falls under that establishment. Whether they're Democrat or Republican, they fall right into that establishment and they don't go to fixing the things that can be fixed. We have a lot of money. This is something that we have the opportunity of doing a lot of good roads, infrastructure, all these programs that are important to our city. We have the opportunity of fixing it. And when you asked me the question earlier, would you be able to fix everything? Would you have to wipe everything out? You have to have a realistic goal of what you can do year to year that you can actually get done. And the things that I gave you and listed from the crime, the core functions, the Veterans Center, development, things that I have a list of doing, these are going to be my top priorities of getting done. Because once you set that bar and you get that momentum going, it's just like I did when I became a council member in District 2. Once you get that momentum going and you have your community see what you're doing and they see things are getting better, they're getting safer, they're getting cleaner, everything's getting better, you have a bar that you've set. So anybody who comes in after you, just like what President Trump did with the fuel, you have a bar that you've set that anybody who comes in after you is going to be looked at of where are they reaching that bar. And now we're paying over double what we paid. These are the things that I'm trying to do and move forward.
Absolutely. Well, I'm appreciative of that very much. I've watched, and I'm sure you have, city governments and some of the past leadership in our city where they try to make winners and losers. I'm opposed to and appalled by major benefits being offered to big, huge corporate entities coming into the city where they get tax relief for 10, 15, 20 years. They get the property almost given to them to get the financing done by the city, et cetera, while mom and pop stores and the small businesses that pay the majority of the taxes in our city, they're ignored and allowed to just simply implode. I think that that's where a city picks winners and losers, and I don't think that's what the government ought to be responsible for in any city. Let's make a transition of thought. We are short many, I don't know whether it's several hundred or more, police officers in our city. What would your thoughts be, and how would you plan on approaching? If we're going to lower crime, we've got to have law enforcement that is, I think we've got like, one or two police officers for every 10,000 population, I think is the number. But how would that be fixed? What is the best approach to take from a mayor's standpoint for that?
So one of the things you have to look at is what is the growth of our city? Last night we passed where I think we had 7,000 new units of development that are getting ready to happen. We are having more people moving in. So we have more people per mile that's living in here. So anytime you're looking at what the statistics are, they're changing on a monthly basis. And we have less and less police. And you'll hear people saying the police should not be having their budgets filled and everything. Every month, the amount that we're having as far as patrol officers is shrinking because we have more growth coming into the city. So we do need to have more police officers. And I will say this, to where we do need to have some type a pension system in here where we have the police officers that we're going to keep. Because right now, and a lot of people don't understand this, that we are training police officers, and they're doing a great job. And what ends up happening is after they're trained, they only have to stay about 4 years, 3 years, and they can leave and go to another place that pays them more. That makes sense. Who wouldn't want to take their family and go get paid more to do something? We need to make it more attractive to bring in and retain the officers, because in the next few years, we're going to have a lot of police officers who are going to retire, and we're going to have a lot of new people coming in, and we want to retain them. We don't want to have this revolving door, because there is a cost in training police officers. You'll hear people argue and fight that, but when you sit on land use and zoning and you see the development, you see all the different communities that are brand new, and also the ones that you know that are projected. It's not even the ones that are coming up right now, but the ones that are coming forward. And we've got to be able to have that coverage with police and fire. And if we don't, we're going to be short. And right now, we don't want to be in a position where somebody calls the police and you hear 45 minutes for a call. You want, when you have an emergency, we want to be able to address it right then and there. And that's the other really important thing. If we fall back, it's always harder to climb back up. We don't want to be known as a city that can't get their calls answered. So we need to really think, how are we going to do that? And part of that is to have additions to the police department.
Absolutely, and I'm in full agreement with that. One of the things, too, because of having so many in our family that's law enforcement, one of the things that's disheartening, discouraging, and defeating for a law enforcement officer is to carry out his job and basically be mocked at by the judicial system, by the individual that's being arrested that day to be turned loose the next morning by 10:30, 11 o'clock. And then the rest rotation continues. And we're finding that in major cities across America, mainly in the blue cities, Democratic cities. But we see that also in our city to a great degree. That I think when you go back to Rudy Giuliani's approach when he was the mayor of New York years ago, was to have law enforcement take care of the small crimes. And if you handle the small crimes, it prevents the larger crimes.
And exactly. So
I believe there needs to be a major, in my opinion, revamping and reanalysis of what we're doing in law enforcement in our city for the protection of the citizens. Because law enforcement cannot do it unless they're backed up by the state attorney's office and other judicial branches that need to carry it out. Al, let me ask you a question. The present mayor has made a declaration to certain people in our city that he's going to remove all of the historic monuments during his term. How do we reverse that trend? What is your opinion? Should we, because some monument might offend our thoughts, because we try to place today's cultural woke culture norms on 100 years ago, 200 years ago history, how do you stand on our historical monuments? Are you for taking any of them down, or are you for preserving all of them? What is your position on that?
So I tried to put a bill forward so people could vote on this. This is a political football that is constantly being thrown around. You'll hear elected officials say, we want to put this away. They don't want to put it away. They want to pull this out at election time so that they can get people to argue about race, money, all these different things. You know, in Germany, if you go back in history, Germany, Poland, they have the buildings that are kept up where they were murdering Jews. History needs to be told, whether it's good or it's bad. It needs to be told so we don't repeat the bad stuff.
Yes.
And what they're trying to do is they're trying to rewrite our history. Now, I've met with these folks who keep saying that they want to take down Confederate monuments. Let me be really clear. When I had these folks in my office, it is not about one statue. It is not about one monument. It is not about one marker. They want to constantly take things down that have anything to do with our history. Let me give you an example. Confederate monuments are up right now. Schools were up before. Street roads are going to come up. You're going to end up having the name of the city. You're going to have the name of bridges. And let me tell you one other thing that really got my attention when they talked with me. They also want to remove the ability for people to buy firearms or ammunition. And they were really clear about this with me, that they are not supporters of the Second Amendment. They say they are, but they're not. And if we don't have our Second Amendment, we don't have any of the other ones. It won't
right.
matter. So
right.
so my faith is what guides me. And when I get into these debates with people and they try to put it on race or they try to do it in some other fashion, I always tell people that my party is not the thing that pushes me. It isn't. It's my faith. It's my compass. It's my the moral compass that pushes me in a direction to where I want to do what's right for everybody, not for the party, for everybody.
Amen.
And if somebody's going to elect me, I don't want to be the least of two evils. I want to be the best candidate. I want to be the candidate that everybody sees. I wanted to be the person that when I got elected, people who didn't support me the first time said, you know what, you really did a good job. I trust what you're saying. Trust is one of the biggest problems that we have in our offices. Nobody trusts elected. I'm in it, and I don't trust the people that I'm around. So I get it. I get it. And I've been around several people who've gotten up and promised that they would support or do something they didn't. So to answer your question, I don't support taking down the monuments. I don't do that. I don't mind putting up things that list things that have happened, good, bad, and I just think those are really important history. If it's not put out there for people to understand what happened and we don't have it out there, it's bound to repeat itself. We have a problem with it repeating itself, even if we have it set out there. But it's important that everybody knows what happens and talk about it and not shy away from it. Talk about the issues and the problems so that we don't repeat these problems.
Absolutely. I'm in full agreement with that. Al, there are a couple of other things, one of which is this. CDC, FDA, World Health Organization, and Joe Biden have recently said that there is a global health emergency. Joe Biden then, by executive order, announced that we have a national health emergency, and they're now using monkeypox, which is a transmission of a virus, a disease, by the homosexual community, and yet they're saying that there's potentiality. Fauci just in the past few days talked about the potentiality of having to go back to mask mandates, social distancing, and lockdowns as a result of monkeypox and the supposed health emergency. Now, my question is very, very simple. And the last time this took place, even though the governor had lifted the mask mandates and the social distancing, et cetera, our mayor, every 30 days, would renew the mask mandate and the social distancing, et cetera, et cetera. Now, it's a very, very, very simple question. Are you willing to make a statement that as mayor, you will not force people to wear a mask or a lockdown based on mayoral authority in the city of Jacksonville, because I believe that should be left up to the individual. If I think that I need to put on a mask, I need to make that decision myself, not where a governmental agency is saying that you've got to be forced to put latex gloves on, let your windows up in your vehicle, put a mask on, and let your air conditioning roll wide open so that you're protecting yourself or others. What is your position on that, and how can we view that for future?
Do you want my short answer or my long
answer? Yes, sir. Both.
Okay. My short answer is no, I would not mandate that. My long answer is no, I would not mandate that.
Okay. That's fair enough, because I find it egregious when there's the mindset the government needs to tell us how to protect our health rather than it being a decision made by the individual. There's one other thing, and it's very, very lengthy, so I'll try to reduce it. There's a statute on the books. It's a Florida statute that allows every county and city government to have through in code enforcement, the fining of homeowners if the grass gets too tall. Down in Dunedin now, there's a man that's being fined $30,000. They're foreclosing on his house because he was out of town for 4 weeks because of his mother's death. The man that was supposed to do the landscaping died that he wasn't familiar with, did not know that the man had died that was supposed to cut his grass. He comes back, and the tickets had amounted to $29,300-some-odd thousand, and they're trying to enforce the foreclosure on his home because of that. Here in Duval County, about 3 years ago, we had a doctor that her husband had passed away, her two sons had passed away, all within 18 months. She had a plethora of properties. One of them she donated to our church. It was on Hamilton Street. It was worth about $50,000. The lot was the main value. But there was almost a $250,000 worth of fines against that house because of the unkept yards. Now, I went through that with the general counsel's office, the chief financial officer, and with the city councilman for our district. We had meeting after meeting after meeting, and they claimed because it was a Florida statute, they cannot do anything about it. Finally, it was reduced to $1,500. The new buyer for the lot paid that $1,500. We did not have to do so. But I think it's egregious for any county, any city, to have the authority to take a poor person's property because he has not been able to get his grass cut or because there should be some cap someplace so the fines do not exceed the value of the property and allow the city municipality to steal the property from the family. And this is happening on a major basis in the city of Jacksonville and across the state. So from a city standpoint, as a mayor, what can you do to intervene with that and to have that modified so that the city residents will feel safe that though they might not be able to cut the grass then, there might be a fine, it might be several fines, but it can never exceed the value of the home and they can never be foreclosed on and put on the streets because they can't pay that fine.
So let me tell you what I've already done as a council member. I've had this problem in my district. And that's exactly what ends up happening is sometimes somebody dies or there's an illness in the family and the fines end up becoming one issue and then the penalties become a by far more horrible issue. So there are ways of getting around that. You know, a lot of times neighborhoods have their own rules and people are supposed to stick with it because they've signed on to doing that. But in a lot of the areas where we've had those problems happen, we've actually been able to address them and get rid of them. It's a lengthy process, but we've been able to do it. And here's part of the thing that you want to watch for is you're trying to do a balancing act. One is you want to give people their rights, but you also don't want to encroach on other people's rights. In other words, one of the things I'm working on right now over in the Cape neighborhood, there is somebody who's renting a home in the middle of a neighborhood, and they've got backhoes, they've got car trailers, and when I say car trailers, I'm talking about the 18-wheelers that haul in 10 cars at a time. They've got dump trucks. They've got grading equipment that are being put right next to people's homes to where somebody has rented this house and is using it like an industrial area. Those are things that we have to protect our community so they don't lose their values, and we have to watch over that. We have
to
be careful.
I agree with that. Our time, Al, we've got about 15, 20 seconds. I agree with that completely, but there needs to be, in my opinion, a cap on what those fines can be and not unlimited. Take the last few seconds, if you will. Tell our listeners how they can reach you, how they can join arms with you, and help you to win. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe we need to put Al Ferrero in office as mayor of the city. Al, tell our listeners in these final seconds how they can reach you.
So it's Al Ferrero for mayor. .com if you go on the computer. I really need some financial help. If anybody would like to have meet and greets or they'd like to reach out to us, our phone number is 642-5246. And we have a mailing address. If anybody would like to mail a letter or checks, it's P.O. Box 550506, Jacksonville, Florida, 32255.
Al, thank you so much for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
Preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with them. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE.